All right, let's get ready for a deep dive today. We're traveling back thousands of years to explore the Indus Valley Civilization. They were really advanced, you know, up there with ancient Egypt and Mesopotamia, and then it's like, poof, they're gone.
Yeah, it's a real head-scratcher, isn't it? We find these amazing cities, super organized, and signs of trade networks that stretched for miles. And then, boom, around 1900 BCE, things start to fall apart.
Yeah, it's wild. We have all these puzzle pieces, archaeology, climate studies, but figuring out what made the Indus civilization decline is a real challenge.
It definitely is. And that's where these different theories come in, right? One of the biggest ones is all about the environment, how changes in climate and resources may have been the main culprit.
Okay, so let's get into that. What kind of environmental changes are we talking about, and what's the evidence for this theory?
Well, think about it. The Indus people relied heavily on this one particular river system, right? For their farms, their whole way of life. And studies, both geological and climate ones, suggest that right around 1900 BCE, rainfall patterns went haywire. We're talking long droughts, maybe even crazy floods, things that would have totally messed up their agriculture.
So not a slow change, but a bunch of sudden shocks, kinda.
Yeah, exactly. You can imagine what that would do. Crops failing, cities struggling to feed everyone. That kind of pressure, it can break even the strongest societies.
It really makes you wonder, how resilient were they? Could they have adjusted to these changes, or were they just too tied to that one river?
That's the big question. Unlike, say, Egypt with the Nile and its pretty predictable floods, the Indus folks were stuck with a river system that was a lot more unpredictable.
So more vulnerable than some other civilizations, you're saying?
It seems that way, yeah. And here's where it gets even more interesting. It might not have been just the climate itself. There are some signs that the Indus people might have actually been adding to their own environmental problems.
Oh, really? What do you mean? Like using up too many resources or something?
There's some evidence pointing in that direction. Think about it. Massive cities, huge populations. They needed tons of wood for building, for fuel, and it looks like they might have been chopping down forests all around them.
Wow, that really shows how everything's connected, huh? Dealing with climate shifts, and then at the same time, maybe making things worse themselves.
Exactly. A reminder that even super advanced societies aren't immune to messing up their environment.
But even with all this environmental pressure, do you think the Indus could have survived if things had been different on the inside? Like, what was going on within their society during all of this?
Ah, that's the other half of the puzzle. We still can't read their writing, so there's a lot we don't know about their social and political scenes. But even without the writing, archaeologists have found some pretty interesting clues.
Like what? What kind of clues?
For starters, there's the shift in settlement patterns. Right around 1900 BCE, their cities start getting smaller, less complex. Some are totally abandoned, others look overcrowded.
So maybe people were migrating, getting out of the areas hit hardest by all the environmental stuff.
Could be, yeah. We also see their material culture changing the kinds of pottery, tools, ornaments they used. These changes could mean economic decline, maybe even new cultural groups coming in.
Almost like they were trying to adapt, to find ways to live in this new world.
Exactly. But it's also possible that these changes weren't all peaceful, you know? We have to think about social unrest, conflicts over resources that were getting scarcer, maybe even political upheavals.
So it's like this perfect storm brewing. You've got the environmental pressures building up, and then you throw in potential conflicts within their own society, and suddenly everything becomes a lot more fragile.
Exactly. It's rarely just one thing that brings a civilization down, right? It's usually this combo of internal and external factors that gets to be too much. And that's what makes the story of the Indus so fascinating and actually so relevant to us today.
You're right. I mean, we've got our own environmental issues to deal with now, and seeing how societies in the past dealt with similar stuff, what worked, what didn't, it's incredibly valuable.
No doubt about it. The past can teach us a lot, warn us, even inspire us as we deal with all the complexities of the 21st century.
Totally agree. But before we go too far down that road, let's dig a bit deeper into these internal pressures. What else can archaeology tell us about what was happening within the Indus society as it started to decline?
It's tricky, you see. The Indus cities, they weren't big on monuments, you know, showing off rulers or big battles. Their art, their buildings, it's more about everyday life, like fertility, nature, trade, that sort of thing.
So is it hard to tell if they had powerful kings or like rivalries that might have weakened them from the inside?
Yeah, exactly. But that doesn't mean there weren't social hierarchies, you know, or tensions. We do see things like specialized crafts, workshops, which suggest that there were economic differences.
So maybe there was this growing gap between different groups. Like The elites could handle the environmental changes better, while others struggled.
It's possible, and we see this change in burial practices too around this time. Some graves get fancier, with more stuff buried with the dead.
Could that mean a more divided society? Maybe even competition for resources as things got scarcer?
It's worth thinking about for sure. And then there's the whole question of how they were governed. We really don't know for sure.
Was it like a big empire or more a bunch of independent city-states?
Ah, that's the big mystery. Some experts think there was a strong central power, maybe based in one of the big cities like Mohenjo-daro or Harappa. Others think it was more spread out, each city with its own rulers and systems.
And would that have made a difference in how they dealt with these crises they were facing?
Potentially, yeah. A centralized system, maybe it's more efficient, you know, getting resources together, coordinating a response to a drought or flood. But it could also be more vulnerable to collapsing if, say, the central power weakens or gets overthrown.
In a system that's more decentralized, maybe that's more adaptable. Like if one city's in trouble, others could help out.
Right. But a decentralized system, it could also mean more conflict, competition between the cities, especially when times are tough.
It makes you wonder, what's the best system for dealing with these kinds of challenges? Whether it's environmental change or social unrest, It's a big question.
It's a question people have been asking forever, really. And going back to the Indus, even with the missing pieces, their story is a powerful reminder about resilience, adaptation.
How so? In what way?
Well, even with all this pressure, they didn't just vanish overnight. You know, the Indus people, they survived for centuries, adapting their way of life, their settlements, their whole culture to this changing world. Their cities may have gotten smaller, their trade routes shifted, but they found ways to keep going.
That's a really good point. It's not just about collapse. It's about how people handle it, how they get creative, how they find ways to go on when things are tough.
Exactly. And that's something that's just as important today as it was thousands of years ago.
Absolutely. You mentioned earlier that the Indus, their experience isn't unique though, right? Have there been other societies that went through something similar?
Oh, for sure. And some of them, they actually look to the past for guidance. You know, figuring out how to govern, how to manage their own complex societies. In fact, there's this fascinating example from 18th century India. The British, they were trying to rule this huge, unfamiliar territory. And guess what? They turned to the Mughal Empire for inspiration.
Wait, the British in India? How does that connect to the Indus?
It might seem strange, but there are some really interesting parallels. The British, just like the Indus people, they were dealing with resource management, a diverse society, and trying to keep things stable in a world that was changing.
Okay, I'm listening. Tell me more about this connection. What did the British learn or think they learned from the Mughals? So they were looking at this older empire, like for a how-to guide on ruling.
Kind of, yeah. See, by the 1770s, the British East India Company, they were calling the shots in Bengal, big time. But they were, at their core, a trading company.
Not a government, right. And they were having a tough time figuring out how to run this huge area.
Yeah, I bet. Going from trading stuff to actually governing people, that's a huge change.
Absolutely. And that's where this ancient constitution idea pops up. It was trendy in 18th century Britain, this idea that if you wanted to be seen as legit, you had to respect the old traditions, the precedents.
So instead of just bringing in British laws and systems, they decided, hey, let's look at what the Mughals did.
Exactly. People like Warren Hastings, the big guy in Bengal back then, they became Mughal fans. They saw them as this model, right? Successfully running a diverse, complicated society for centuries.
But how did that play out in real life? Did they just copy-paste the Mughal laws and systems?
It was more nuanced than that. They dug into Mughal ways of doing things, like their administration, how they collected taxes, their legal stuff. They even talked to former Mughal officials, trying to understand how it all worked. So like a crash course in Mughal government.
Yeah, you could say that. But here's the catch. They picked and chose what they liked from Mughal history, focused on the parts that worked for them, and kind of ignored the rest.
Not exactly objective history, though.
Not quite. Like, they were all about the Mughal system of taxes, super efficient, but they weren't so keen on the Mughals thing for religious tolerance. Didn't really fit their colonial plans, you know?
So they were basically using history to make themselves look good, to justify being in charge.
To some degree, yeah. But it's also worth noting that they really thought they were bringing back order, making things efficient again, in a system they saw as going downhill. Like, they were fixing this once great empire.
Sounds like a pretty convenient way to see history.
It was. And in the end, it had mixed results. They learned some good stuff from the Mughals, but they messed up too, pushing their own ideas on a society that wasn't always on board.
So, looking at both the Indus and the British, what's the lesson here?
I think the takeaway is that history, it's a powerful tool, but it can be used in a lot of ways. Both the Indus and the Brits show us that when societies hit a crisis, they often look back for answers.
But those answers aren't always simple or unbiased, right?
Right. It's on us to really think about the stories we inherit, to see how history is being used, and question the assumptions behind those stories.
That's a good reminder. History isn't just dates and facts. It's understanding the choices people made, the tough situations they were in, and what they left behind. Sometimes the most important lessons make us question what we think we know.
Couldn't agree more.
Well, there you have it, folks. A deep dive into the Indus Valley Civilization's decline with an unexpected stop in 18th century British India.
Who would have thought those two would be so connected?
Right. But that's history for you, full of surprising links and things that make you think. We hope you enjoyed this trip back in time. Join us next time for another deep dive into the past.